Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's June the 28th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with independent analyst Dan Zwicker of Bloomington, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the cost of milk is up, but it's not all ethanol's fault. There's a new way to measure the ethanol yield from an acre of corn. And soybean rust is in Louisiana. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on AM 580's Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat in the soft red at 11 1/4 higher at $6.25. And the September futures, that's actually the Kansas City, 6.07 1/4 for the Kansas City, up 4 3/4. July wheat in Chicago at $6.09, up 3 for the day. September futures there at 6.23 3/4. They were up 2 1/4. And December at 6.33, up 4 1/2 for the afternoon. July corn futures at $3.39 1/2 a bushel, down 4 1/4. September's at $3.50, down 3 3/4. And December contract down 3 3/4 as well. It finished at $3.58 1/4. That's the harvest month in the corn pit. July soybean futures, 8.09 3/4, up 6 1/4, and the August to date, 16 1/4, up 4 1/2. November beans, 4 3/4 higher at $8.42 1/4. Bean meal futures, July contract at 2.18.20, up 30 for the day. July bean oil at 35.57, up 0.61. And the feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange gained $1.20 at $109.77 1/2 a hundredweight. June live cattle at $86.92 1/2 were up $1.62 1/2, and the August futures at $90.15, up 90 cents for the day. July lean hogs at $71.90, they were down 42 1/2 on the afternoon. August crude oil futures at $69.63, up 66 at this time, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average on the last tick at 13,468, up just about 40 points for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is independent market analyst Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Little rainfall here, and rain makes grain in Chicago. Split decision on the corn and the soybeans for the afternoon.
Well, the rain has definitely been the big negative on corn. But also, I think more of a driving force in the decline in corn has been expectations that maybe tomorrow's report may show a 1 to 2 million acre increase. I've heard talk maybe as high as 3 million. We'll have to just kind of see on that. I do think that the spring weather pattern was at least good enough that we got our 90 million planted, but I mean, there's reason to, you know, who says we got all 90 planted? We'll have to find out. But the trade, I think, kind of feels that that number is going to be much bigger. And then when you multiply it by, you know, maybe a national average yield of 152 or 153, I think after these rains, we're starting to talk about a pretty good sized crop. We're talking about a crop over 13 billion, I think. So that's what the trade is trading, is the rain here kind of came just in the nick of time here for late June, going into early July, and then larger acres.
Anything you see in the quarterly grain stocks that could surprise the marketplace?
Well, unlikely, but there could be. I mean, usually... you know, there's probably not going to be much more than 100 million bushel miss, and I'm not too sure 100 million bushel makes a whole lot of difference here. But if it did come in on the higher side of the trade estimate, that would just, when you take into account the rains that we've had here on crop improvement, it would probably be, you know, just more fuel to drive this market lower as we go on into early July.
Tell me about your cyclic analysis at this point for the corn.
Well, there's a shot that corn could be making a seven-week type cycle low in here. I think the market is technically oversold enough to do so. I think a larger acreage increase is pretty well priced into the marketplace. So unless we got a real shocker tomorrow, I think the trade could probably look back and say, that's old news. We've worked that price in, and then the market would be ripe for a period of consolidation. And then, of course, you know, we still have weather to trade yet, even though we do have some good rains in the Midwest and crop conditions look awfully good. We still have another month of weather yet to trade.
For those who missed the opportunity the first time around, what should they be thinking about over the next month and a half besides that missed opportunity, I suppose?
Well, it's kind of hard to say a whole lot. I mean, for right now, there's probably price protection on and all this business until we see what tomorrow's reports are. And then I suppose you have to kind of take a look at selling a recovery rally of some kind if we would get a bounce based upon a dry weather forecast or something like that. You'd have to kind of take a look at, depending upon where you're, you know, where you're sold at. But the market, once you get to this point and there's no surprises tomorrow, you know, the crop is out there. Now, we can argue about whether or not it's, you know, 12.2 or 12.5 or 13 billion, but the trade is feeling fairly comfortable with a pretty good-sized corn crop at the moment.
As we go through the season, then marketing season, that is, in the coming year, what are the opportunities you think that producers can look at? Will there be enough demand from ethanol to chew through a big crop?
Well, I think the market will begin to look ahead, just as it did last year or last fall. It began to kind of look ahead at acreage increases, the expanding demand for ethanol, and that as gobbling up the demand base for corn. And the market is in a competition for acres. And now the function of the wheat market here with the big decline in world wheat stocks, U.S. crops not that good, is to attract acres. And see, whereas corn is back down to its May lows or even below it, the wheat market continues to march higher here. And the function of the wheat market now will be to stay firm. That doesn't mean that it can't top and settle back, but I think it wants to put additional acres of wheat into production. So that should, I think, be a stabilizing influence to corn, because that's what the market is going to try to do, is pull acres into wheat as we go into the fall. Mm-hmm. Soybeans are going to be very much similar situation. Is the function of the soybean market is to try to get South America to pick up the slack here. If we've got a big shortfall in soybean acres, if it shows out tomorrow's report that we did plant a lot of corn, then that means it probably came out of soybeans, and the soybean acreage estimate may not be quite as big. So the function of the bean market now will be to encourage South Americans to plant more bean acres. So somewhere here in this struggle for acres, corn ought to find some support, because corn will look ahead, I think, and based upon the growing demand base, that corn will begin to try to say, "Golly, we need to rally, or otherwise we're going to, you know, we're going to plant more wheat acres." That means it's going to be harder to get a big increase in corn acres next year.
So the wheat should be supportive. That would pull it right on through the fall, as we don't sow wheat, at least winter wheat, until we get into the fall. And now,
yeah,
the first
I suspect that the wheat market ought to stay firm at least into the August-September time frame, or until it feels like it has got those acres bought, either through survey work that would indicate wheat acres are climbing, or other ways the trade kind of finds out you know, what happens, I suppose, with the wheat acres. But that's going to be the function of the wheat market, is to attract wheat acres to pick up the slack worldwide on declining world wheat inventories. And I think corn will eventually catch into that. But right now we're trading, you know, a bigger acreage increase than what USJ said in March. Whether or not that's right or wrong, we'll find out tomorrow morning. And then it's trading this shift to much more favorable weather and chances that we can get a national average yield up into the 150s.
And tell me about the cash side of this market. We've got July corn at 339.5, and what we have in the way of cash corn, I think it's at 329.5, 12.5 under or something like that at this point, and probably dropping again today. But on the bean side, there's been some awfully big basis numbers in that area over the last 2 weeks. What do you think of old crop soybeans?
Well, what the trade is looking at is the large carryout. We've got a lot of old crop soybean inventory around. Now, distant-wise, the supplies look like they could tighten based upon smaller acres. And, of course, we don't know what our August weather is and how that may impact this year's soybean yields. But what it's reflecting, the basis reflects spot inventory levels, and spot inventory levels of soybeans are quite large. The trade's expecting producers to move a large percentage of those soybean inventories into the marketplace yet this summer or before new crop harvest. So basis levels are sloppy in that bean thing, whereas the corn, we have a much tighter situation in corn. We've got a strong domestic demand for corn. So the corn basis levels have been much firmer, you know, compared to the soybean situation.
All right. Anything else to add before we let you go for the day?
No, that's about it.
We appreciate it much.
Very well.
Independent market analyst Dan Zwicker joining us. He's from Bloomington, Illinois, on this Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, just after the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM580's own Mike Solis says tonight across the two-state region, skies will be mostly cloudy. There will be a few showers and some thunderstorms. Lows will range from 60 in northwestern Illinois to around 70 in southern Indiana. Tomorrow, northern Illinois cloudy, a few lingering showers early, then becoming mostly sunny. Elsewhere, cloudy, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs from 72 near Lake Michigan to 85 in the far south. In today's agricultural news, as if gasoline prices were not enough, now a gallon of milk will take some extra cash from the consumer's wallet. So will the price of cheese. Prices are, of course, on the rise, and that's getting national attention. Media outlets are blaming the price hikes on corn, but National Milk Producers Federation Vice President of Communications Chris Galen says that's really only part of the story.
When you see the media stories about the high corn prices being the main reason, That's sort of like the Cliff's Notes version, or maybe the fourth grade version of an explanation of this. It's not just one factor. It's all factors working together. Anytime the prices rise or fall, there are imbalances in supply and demand. And with respect to dairy, certainly the cost of production has gone up in the past year. Corn is a big factor, but some of that's also due to high soybean and high alfalfa prices. It's also the high energy prices.
In fact, according to ag economist John Urbanchuk, a recent study shows higher energy prices have twice the impact on food prices at the retail level than higher corn prices.
Energy prices affect food prices across the entire production, processing, and distribution chain. Everything from the field to the grocery store chain, energy has an impact.
So as the milk producers Galen noted, corn prices are only part of this story. And when you look at the annual operating cost for a dairy farm, Urbanchuk says it's even clearer corn prices are not to blame for the rising dairy prices.
Feed grains, corn alone, really affects a relatively small percentage of total operating costs.
Urbanchuk says Galen's also right to note imbalances in supply and demand. Supply and demand issues, according to Urbanchuk, are also having an impact on other retail prices, including livestock and poultry prices. DuPont and Foss North America on Wednesday announced an agreement that will allow the use of proprietary ethanol yield potential calibration technology in FOSS, that's Foss grain analyzers. According to Russ Sanders, marketing director of Pioneer Hybrid, Pioneer's ethanol yield potential calibration provides a nearly instant prediction of ethanol yield potential of grain and provides estimated yield in gallons per bushel terms. And because of this information to provide it to growers, Sanders says it's a significant milestone in the industry's efforts to increase ethanol output per acre.
And this allows them to tailor corn hybrid choices that they plant to maximize their ethanol yield on every single acre.
When it comes to the type of grain processors they're looking for, Sanders says the market will have to send that signal. But by providing farmers with easier access to corn quality information, he says Pioneer hopes the decision-making process on both ends will be based on some better information. Sanders says Pioneer is optimistic about improving ethanol yield potential through the tools of biotechnology. Asian soybean rust has now been confirmed in two central Louisiana soybean sentinel plots. Dr. David Lankless is the Louisiana State University grain specialist, and he says things are really starting to pick up.
Now, Dr. Blaine Villatar down in south central Louisiana also had a suspicious sample from Assumption Parish. It's still very, very small, would be in a sentinel plot as well, but the news is it's on beans, and as well as this weekend, we did get confirmation from down in southeast Texas, very near to the Mexico line, that there is another confirmed case on production soybeans as well. So things are starting to move, and I'm certainly not saying they're escalating at any kind of rapid pace, but as people continue to start searching for rust, I think we're going to continue starting to find it.
According to USDA's soybean rust website, the reports of soybean rust so far in 2007 are similar to last year, with the exception of earlier reports in Louisiana and in Texas on commercial soybean fields. Rust has been detected in 10 Florida counties, 5 Georgia counties, 5 Alabama counties, and 4 Louisiana parishes, along with 3 counties in Texas. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Daily Farms Incorporated, Arthur; First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; GCOM Incorporated, Savoy; and Tepper Electric, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. Up next, the Western Corn Rootworm has emerged a bit early this growing season. We'll have some of the thoughts from the extension entomologist at the University of Illinois. The emergence of Western Corn Rootworm adults is well underway across much of the southern and central part of Illinois. In many corn fields, University of Illinois Extension entomologists say a range of corn rootworm life stages can be found, including second and third instars, pupa, and adults. They anticipate more leaf feeding this season in corn fields because of this early adult emergence. It currently does not coincide well with the usual feeding habits of the Western. It normally munches on corn pollen and corn silks. Well, the entomologist make a comparison to 1988 in this week's edition of the U of I Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin, and suggest it would be good if those comparisons were to end now. The Midwest suffered a devastating drought in that year. Speaking of comparisons, in that same bulletin article, which you can read online at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin, the U of I entomologist, Mike Gray and Kevin Steffi, report they've been checking their standard corn rootworm efficacy trial located south of Urbana. They note plants in many treatments are under considerable stress due to root damage and lack of moisture. Several of the root systems, they say, were infested with corn rootworm larvae. They also observed a striking difference between the BT and the non-BT plots. Plants in the BT plots, the two say, were faring much better and had considerably less leaf rolling than the non-BT treatments. Because of the very dry soil conditions in Urbana throughout May and June, the soil insecticides are facing a significant performance challenge. Of course, the observations and data collected from the U of I root evaluations will be made available later in the season. Until then, Mike and Kevin are asking farmers and field scouts for their perceptions regarding corn rootworm product performance. You can send them by email or call them in to Kevin Steffi or Mike Gray on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. Just a reminder very quickly that we're closing in on the end of our fundraising for the coming year. Everything has to be in the bank by the end of this month. If you have the opportunity to give us a call and pledge your financial support, please do that at 217-244-9455. We're 88% of the way to our goal for having everything in the bank, but there are just a couple of days left. If the ag programming makes a difference to you and you can spare the change, drop it off at 217-244-9455. Speaking of the phone lines, on that line this afternoon with us, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What are farmers telling you they expect tomorrow morning when the USDA releases the acreage report?
Well, I think that everybody's kind of in the boat that we'll probably see some more corn acres, at least in Illinois. I think if Illinois doesn't show more corn acres, I'm going to be really surprised. But the question on a lot of people's minds is what happened out in the, you know, the Western Belt and down in the Southeast, and did they get everything planted that they wanted to?
And the other question I have is, are farmers in your area and the clients that you're talking to around the Midwest still talking about residual damage from the dry weather earlier in the season?
Really, most of my customers are in pretty satisfied right now with how things have gone the last 10 days and feel like things are really sitting good. I do have some customers. I know I've got a customer in Michigan that I was talking to this morning that's, you know, they haven't had any rain. They're continuing to herd up there, you know, some of the outlying areas. But as far as most of the central Illinois situation, I think everybody's pretty satisfied right now.
On the cash side and on the brokerage side, I suppose both. Maybe on the brokerage side there's something to do, but on the cash side, sit and wait on your hands for tomorrow morning?
I think that's the best way to go unless you just really haven't done anything up to this point. But I think if your best bet is to see what it says. I guess I'm kind of in the camp that, and I think Dan may have said this earlier, I didn't catch everything there, but I think if you have a neutral, you know, a number similar to the March numbers, I think that really isn't going to be negative at all and probably is a little bit friendly to the market.
Indeed. That is exactly what he said, that if we had a number that was about what we had, that this market probably has found a space here that it might be satisfied with for a bit. What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn at 318, beans 765.
Anything else that we should discuss before I let you go?
Well, no, just a little bit better corn bases this week, but we're not back to the best levels that we've seen, but we're continuing to stay steady, a little bit better.
All right, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bill Mayers with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. In just about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. Up next, your regional newscast. This is the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Both sides of the Champaign Unit 4 consent decree say they have more reading to do before they know if a landmark Supreme Court ruling will affect the agreement to improve racial equity in the schools. The High Court ruled that school diversity plans in two districts unconstitutional because they use race as a primary factor when determining the schools where students are assigned. Champaign's Schools of Choice program uses race as a factor in placing students. Unit 4 Assistant Superintendent Beth Shepard says district staff will pore over the ruling and comment at a future board meeting. Carol Ashley, an attorney for the plaintiffs in the Unit 4 consent decree, believes the desegregation programs in the Supreme Court ruling were voluntary, whereas Unit 4 is under a court order. A ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that blocked the execution of a Texas death row inmate may have a bearing on an Indiana case.
Norman Timberlake's execution for the 1993 killing of a state trooper was blocked by the Indiana Supreme Court last January because his case could be affected by the Texas case. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy said the claim that the Texas inmate suffers from a severe documented illness that causes gross delusions is an argument that should have been considered. Timberlake's attorneys argue that he should not die because he is insane and therefore doesn't qualify for the death penalty. A federal judge in Florida says there's no need for a mistrial in the terrorism support trial of former Chicago gang member Jose Padilla. Defense attorneys had asked for a mistrial after a juror reportedly saw one of Padilla's co-defendants in shackles outside the courtroom today. A hearing is scheduled tomorrow in Missouri to determine if an Illinois investigator should be deposed by attorneys for a man accused of killing his wife and three children. Attorneys for Christopher Vaughn want to question the Illinois State Police Sergeant, but prosecutors in Missouri want to block that, saying it has nothing to do with Vaughn's extradition proceedings. U.S. Senator Barack Obama says he doesn't favor impeachment proceedings for President Bush or Vice President Cheney. Obama made the comment in response to a question asked in a meeting in Washington with his Illinois constituents today. The Illinois Democrat says he's distressed by the Bush administration's ethical standards and secrecy, but the presidential hopeful says impeachment should be reserved for grave breaches of the president's authority. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is WILL Urbana on a Thursday afternoon. We're joined to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, over the past 24 hours here, our weather station says about 8 tenths over the recent hours, I think, for the day, maybe since midnight, I'm not sure, about 4 tenths. So half of that in the last, 12 hours or so. A little bit more than that, actually. So can we expect more overnight, and when will it stop?
Well, I think there may be a little bit more in the next several hours. First, there's a band of precipitation, and then sort of a curving band starts in eastern Kansas, then curves eastward across northern Missouri, now and along the southern Iowa border, and right through central Illinois into central Indiana. And activity is moving eastward along this band, but the band itself, which is actually represented by a weather front, is moving southward. And to the north of this band, there's really nothing going on. So we expect to see the bands sink southward during the balance of today and tonight. And precipitation is already pretty much over north of I-74. I think the axis of the band is down. Will be down through I-70 this evening and very slowly work its way out of the state. So we are going to clear from the north, and that's the good news. The temperatures are going to be cool, and I think that's not bad news either as we start off the long weekend. I don't know which weekend they're going to consider the July 4th weekend. But at any rate, fair weather from late Friday through Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and then maybe some showers later next week.
And then tell me about this. The weekend's going to be pretty fair and sunshiny all weekend long, probably?
Yeah, I think so. As this thing subsides. Now, that may not be true for late Friday and Saturday for extreme downstate Illinois. Along the Ohio River Valley, the clouds and showers may linger on for another day through Friday. But eventually, the whole mass of activity is going to subside through the mid-south and into the deep south over the next several days. Another band of showers will develop up over the northern plains again, but that'll be north of the Midwest for the most part, at least through the middle of next week. So we're in a band, or will be in a band, of fair weather and very pleasant temperatures, I think, through the next 4 or 5 days. Once this rain gets out of the way, and some of that rain could be really quite heavy in the southern half of the state in the next 12 to 24 hours.
And speaking of heavy rain, Texas and areas in the southwest have really been deluged.
Yes, they have indeed. So some extraordinary amounts of rain on this pattern, which is so persistent. Remember, we talk about persistence of weather patterns, and this is one of them. And they've had one station reported over 19 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. And, of course, that's a flooding amount of rain. And Fort Worth, Dallas has had the heaviest rainfall since 1928. I emphasize the word since because whenever you hear the word since, it means sometime in the past the same thing happened. So this is not a unique pattern. It's just a recurrence of a pattern that's very, unlikely. It's an unusual possibly even a rare pattern, but not a unique pattern.
Indeed. Anything else we ought to check up on before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think, very quickly, I don't see any change in this current general idea, so I'm not looking for any heat or drought for the Midwest for the next few weeks. That gets us into July and maybe even past pollination. And finally, we're seeing unusually cold weather across a lot of the continents of the southern hemisphere, unusual cold weather. And I have a suspicion we might see one of these cold shots work its way up into southern Brazil, and that should arouse some interest among people who follow coffee and crops that are grown in the wintertime in southern Brazil.
We appreciate you being with us.
Uh-huh, my pleasure.
That's agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt joined us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets. We'll report to you at that point the acreage numbers. If you can't wait, you can always get them right on our website. Should be posted not long after 7:30 a.m. Central Time at WILLAG.org. If you want them delivered to your email, sign up on that website for our Ag newsletter. That's WILLAG.org. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can find the numbers there tomorrow morning just after 7:30. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.